This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
A tragic double murder strikes the community of Wetumpka. We give you the details on tactics.
Staring, looking funny at me when I step to the window and I toss the TV.
Good morning. Welcome into Tactics. You're listening to us on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com, 860-1440. That is the way to get in touch with us. If you have a desire to do so, don't forget, you can always get in touch with us via Facebook or Twitter. You can tweet me at Tactics Radio. Be sure to give me a follow there. And you can always check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Tactics Radio, both of which have seen quite a bit of activity this past week. So interesting, since we had kind of a slow week. But if you ever want to get in touch with us, you want to be a part of the show, that is the way to do it. You can actually call in directly from the Facebook page if you're on your phone. But all that being said, we do have, unfortunately, some really awful news that needs to be talked about this morning. Just absolutely tragic what is going on this past weekend. And sadly, there was quite a bit of depressing news sort of in this same area. And when I say area, I mean sort of the area of stories, not the geographic location, although there's another story just out of Birmingham, so not too far from us, that had sort of a similar feel, but not quite as gruesome as this one. First of all, I do want to ask you this question. I want you to think about this as we're going through this particular story. Can you imagine the fear and terror of being murdered? That's something that would obviously be horrific for everybody. There's a reason that psychopaths murdering people is a common theme, for example, in horror movies. It's because it's something that we all have a very reasonable fear of, because of the horror that would take place, especially if it were in some kind of gruesome way. That's the reason that is the source of so many horror stories. But think about this, and this is unfortunately the reality. It's actually pretty rare for people to murder those that they do not know. Most of the time when we're talking about crime, it is somebody that you know. Now, most of the time it happens to be an enemy or somebody that you've had a falling out with, but imagine that the person that murdered you was somebody that you knew, somebody that you trusted, somebody that you had put your faith in, a family member, somebody that you had been close to, somebody that you had lived with. Now imagine that you are incredibly fragile. A 12-year-old girl, for example, which is something that's very hard for me to relate to. I'm a guy. I've always been big for my age. I've always been able to stand up for myself. The fear of feeling so helpless, especially at the hands of somebody that you've trusted, who raised you. That's unfortunately the story that we're dealing with that came out of the community of Wetumpka just this week. Just absolutely horrific what happened. And to give you some of the details here, what I'm talking about is there was a man who murdered his wife and daughter. The other day, there was a 51-year-old Air Force vet, and this happened on Saturday, who murdered his wife and young daughter. Now, just so you know, the details here are pretty graphic, and I do want to warn you about that. But it really does read almost like a horror story, like something that you would see in one of those thriller movies. And just the fact that the murderer and the victim were so close, members of the immediate family, and the way that everything shook out. First of all, the couple were both in the Air Force, so they were both veterans. And his wife, Charlene, again, also an Air Force veteran, was 44 at the time. He was 51. and they had been married for 24 years. So it's not like this was a recent marriage. This was somebody that had been married to him for about 2.5 decades at this point. And they had a 13-year-old daughter and 12-year-old triplet girls. So 4 daughters, 3 of them triplets, and 1 who's about a year older than the rest of them. And he shot the wife and 1 of the triplets, and they died almost immediately based on what we can tell. So just a horrific, tragic way to go like that, being murdered, in the wife's case, being murdered by your husband, and then the daughter being murdered. I do hope, not that I think that this makes it a whole lot better, but I do hope that what happened is that the wife, well, I don't know, because the wife going first, maybe the daughter had to witness her own mom being killed by her father, which I imagine would have been, I have no idea how to even contemplate putting myself in that position. But the opposite, if the mother was having to watch her husband murder her child in front of her, it's just, it's really too horrible to even consider what that must have been like. And after he shot his wife of 24 years and 1 of his 12-year-old daughters, luckily the 13-year-old and the other 2 girls escaped. The 13-year-old apparently escaped with, at best, minor injuries or possibly unscathed. The story that I read in the coverage didn't really go into great detail on that. But the other 2 girls have serious gunshot wounds, so he was trying to kill all of them. And luckily, there were 3 of the daughters that were able to escape, but there are 2 that had some serious issues there and apparently had serious gunshot wounds. I have not read anything about their condition. Anytime when you're dealing with minors and you're looking into these news stories, it's harder to get information. Not because anybody's trying to hide it or anything like that, just because that's the way the law works. You can't release information about minors as readily as you can adults because there's legal protections there, which makes sense. I'm not upset about that. I'm just saying that you have to be aware of the fact that it's harder to get that information out here when looking into the reporting because of that. And one thing that is awful to think about too, even though to a much less degree of a family member, that this lady who passed, she was a school teacher. And so there are a bunch of students that presumably when they start school back coming into the end of the summer, when August starts up, they won't have their teacher. So there were a lot of people that are going to be affected by this in the Wetumpka community. And what happened at the end of this just absolute horror show is that he wound up killing himself and lit the house on fire. So clearly a deeply disturbed and deranged individual. And we do have a little bit of a motive on all this. Apparently Charlene, the wife who was killed, filed for divorce on June the 28th, so just 9 days before this event happened, and the couple allegedly had been living separately for a while, so for whatever reason, we don't know exactly what caused the divorce or anything like that. Those details are not available, and they may never become available. Because to be honest, I don't know that anybody else knew a lot of the details except for the daughters, and I really don't think that anybody has a desire to interrogate these girls to get the story right now, so details will be slow coming if they come out at all on that. But apparently she did file for divorce 9 days ago. She cited irreconcilable differences, but he contested them, but that's all we really know right now, that she had filed for divorce. He didn't want to get divorced. And unfortunately, this ended in this just absolutely horrific event taking place. Now, don't misunderstand me here. I'm in no way making excuses for this man's behavior. I don't think that anybody in their right mind would ever try to do that. I'm just saying that this does show you some of the depth of the pain and the feeling of regret that can be caused by divorce. Divorce is horrible for everybody involved. I mean, even if divorce is 100% justified and there's a good reason for it, and it's, I mean, the reason is okay legally, okay biblically, even in that situation, it's still horrible. It's still incredibly difficult to go through. I mean, I've obviously never been through a divorce because I've never been married, but I have been near people who have been divorced time and time again, countless couples that unfortunately have split up, and it's just devastating for everybody involved, the family, the children specifically, the people and the friends around them. It is so difficult for folks to deal with. And unfortunately, this guy, I guess the stress got to him, and he allowed himself to go to that dark place where he allowed his circumstances to control his actions. He chose to do the wrong thing and take his grief and whatever it was he was feeling out on other people, innocent people. And so I just hate that it wound up ending like this. And unfortunately, there's another story that is not nearly as gruesome. It's not nearly as dragged out, and it's not by somebody the person knew, but we have a similar story that was really depressing coming out of Birmingham. We'll get to that in just a second. And I do think that there is a lesson that we can take from all of this, and I'll get to it hopefully within the next segment. We'll go there in just a second. 860-1440 if you want to call in. If you happen to be somebody that knew the family that happened to have some details on this, I'd love to hear what you have to say about them. Love to get a little more insight in it. You know, not to pull at an open wound, because I know that this is very new, so don't share any information that you think would be sensitive right now. But if there is information that you think would be useful to our audience, feel free to tweet in at Tactics Radio or call in. We'll talk about this and another story out of Birmingham in just a second. 860-1440. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
There must be religion. When that ligament is torn, society is disjointed and its members perish. The most important of all lessons is the denunciation of ruin to every state that rejects the precepts of religion. Governor Morris, signer of the Constitution.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, that's the way to get in touch with us, or you can tweet at Tactics Radio. Right before the break, we were talking about this just absolutely heart-wrenching double murder that took place in Wetumpka over the weekend, where the 51-year-old Air Force veteran murdered his wife and one of his young daughters. Luckily, the other three escaped. Two of his triplets did not escape without injury, however, and I don't know exactly what kind of condition they're in. Especially when you're dealing with minors, it's difficult to get medical records and figure out what condition that they're in if you're not a member of the family. But nonetheless, these girls are going to need an awful lot of prayer. I mean, having gone through that, of course, the physical scars in the case of the two girls that were shot, that's going to be something that is not easy to overcome in and of itself. But just the emotional scars of having one of your parents kill the other one and one of your sisters, I cannot imagine what going through something like that would be like. So I do hope that each and every one of you will remember this family in their prayers, and hopefully they have a strong faith. Hopefully they have a church family that can help these people. I'm sure that there will be a GoFundMe account or something that's made, and hopefully we can help out with that. I'll try to get details on that as they continue to emerge, because this is something that happened right here in our backyard, and I do hope that they will be able to do that. I mean, when it comes to the GoFundMe stuff, I'm motivated to do something like that on my own, but I don't know the family. I don't know where I would put the funds. And so hopefully there will be a next of kin, a cousin, or like it was in my case with my cancer fund, an uncle that helps out with that. And hopefully we will be able to get information on that to you before too long if you want to donate and help these kids, because goodness knows what they need far more than money right now is prayers and support, and hopefully everybody in the audience will be able to just take a little time out of your day and say a quick prayer for this family and the community of Wetumpka, because that is something that has really shaken that community. And unfortunately, I know that the bad news just keeps coming. In Birmingham, there was a 16-year-old who was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting. The girl's name was Arielle Parker, and she was gunned down and bled out for the next 30 minutes despite being rushed to Children's of Alabama. I'm sure that her doctors and nurses did the absolute best that they could. Children's of Alabama is a great facility, absolutely amazing work that they're doing there with children and their illnesses, and they rushed her there. But I'm sure they did everything they could, but it just was not enough. They're not miracle workers. They can't stop death. And unfortunately, this poor girl wound up succumbing to her injuries in just this absolutely senseless violence that took place in Birmingham. Same night, actually, as the double murder that we were talking about with when it came to Wetumpka. And what is really tragic about this was a girl that was about to start her senior year of high school. And to be just sort of randomly gunned down by what is presumably gang violence just in a drive-by shooting. It's unclear whether or not she was being targeted. It seems to be random, but they're really not sure yet. And just hearing stories like that really does center you and make you think about what really is important. Because there is so much tragedy going on, especially with people that have their whole life ahead of them. Like this 12-year-old girl that was killed, the 16-year-old girl that was killed in Birmingham. These stories really do pull at you and I think have an influence on you. And with me, it reminds me that we live in a very dark and very sinful world, that mankind is a fallen species that has fallen from grace and fallen from the intended will of God that we were supposed to always uphold when we partook of the fruit of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. And ever since then, because sin has entered the world, there have been horrific acts committed by human beings. And just the thought of that and the thought of what humans are capable of, especially in this case where a man murdered his own child, it's very sobering to think that we're all capable of great evil like that. But you know what else? Because we are capable of great evil, we're also capable of great good. God could have designed us in such a way that we would be incapable of engaging in evil, that mankind would never fall, that we would have no options, no ability to fall from the light, fall from perfection. He could have made us that way. But to do so would be to make us incapable of doing good, incapable of loving one another. And so, in the wake of all this, I am reminded that because we have the capacity to do some of these horrific things, we also have the capacity of great compassion and the love that God instilled in us. And I think there's one great story of that happened over the weekend, in a weekend that was filled with bad news. I was very refreshed to see some good news. Four of those boys that were trapped in the flooded cave and in Thailand, there was a monsoon that came in, and because of that, the cave flooded and they were unable to escape. There were 12 boys there and their coach, who was also there with them. Thankfully, even though it's always bad to have more people trapped, thankfully there was an adult with them that was able to help them in that situation. I'm sure that they are grateful for him. And after 2 weeks of trying to put together rescue efforts, 4 of the boys were rescued the other day. The operation took about 7 hours and 40 minutes. They were expecting it to take 12 hours, so it went off even better than they thought that it would. This was a great effort by an 18-man rescue team who consisted of 13 foreign divers and 5 Thai Navy SEALs, which surprised me because I didn't even know Thailand had Navy SEALs. I thought that was an exclusively American thing, or maybe they're just saying that it is the Thailand equivalent to the Navy SEALs, or maybe we've done some kind of joint operation with Thailand. I'm not really sure the history of that, but nonetheless, 5 of them are Thai Navy SEALs, and they were able to get in there with the help of those 13 foreign divers, and they rescued 4 of the boys. This is an incredibly tricky operation, something that is not easy to overcome, and that was really sort of put on display when one of the Navy SEALs perished Friday trying to get through the cave. So this is a guy who had a lot of experience diving, somebody that has a wealth of training, and he died trying to get through this cave because of how treacherous it is to try to get through there. And think about that when you think about this. He had all that training, all that experience, and he still died trying to navigate these narrow passageways. They're trying to get 12 boys, kids, to put on the diving gear and be able to pull them out. Now, they have the diver's there to help guide them, but they still have to actually go through the passage. And if somebody with that level of experience and skill could get was unable to make it through and wound up dying in the caves on this rescue mission, which I'm sure his sacrifice is appreciated by those boys and the coach, imagine how difficult it is for a child that has no training to make it through like this. And so I do want to give all kinds of praise here and thanks to God as well that four of these boys have been rescued. This is supposed to resume later today. So hopefully they'll be able to get more members of the team out. Hopefully they'll be able to get more boys and eventually they'll get the coach as well to where everybody's out. I do pray for their safety and I hope that we can make it out of here. But to me, that was just something that was really needed, especially after all the bad news that we got this weekend. The fact that humans are capable of great compassion, that when we are willing to come together and we want to do good and we want to put our heads together, we can accomplish truly great things. That story really, in my mind, emphasized that, and I am truly grateful for the accomplishment that they were able to make here. We can do absolutely amazing things when we set our mind to it, and that's what this story is really a reminder of. It looks like we've got a couple calls on right now, 860-1440, if you want to grab one of those open lines, and we will go straight to your calls. That'll be the first thing we do when we come back. 860-1440, if you want to grab one of those open lines.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
James 1:25. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 is the way to get in touch with us if you have a desire to do so. You're also welcome to tweet us at Tactics Radio. And we're going to go to the phones right now. Let's go to Ben on line one. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Caleb. You know, listening to this, it's really hard for us to wrap our mind around these heinous and godless acts that people, we people in general on earth, you know, commit and do to each other. And, you know, you ask yourself, okay, maybe it was stress. Maybe it's a mental illness. You can go so far as to say demonic possession, you know. But I ask this question. Mm-hmm. Did he have God in his life? Did he have Jesus? Was he following Jesus? If he was, then, you know, God help him. I mean, you know.
I don't know if he was a believer. I don't know how he was in his personal life, but I think anybody can definitively say that when he took that turn to where he was willing to hurt somebody else, that he was no longer following Jesus at the time, for sure.
Well, I have found all the bad things. You know, I used to just be a wanderer, you know, until I found Christ, you know, through my wife.
We all were, brother.
And I'm telling you, I could have been anywhere but where I am now, and I'm in a great state now. I could have been in a worse, you know, state. I could have been terrible, just bad off, you know. So I thank God for my wife, you know, bringing me to Christ again. And I strayed. But I found that if you have Christ in your life, Jesus, you follow him, you can't go wrong, you know. Yeah, bad things are going to happen, but he's guiding you on the right path, you know.
Yeah, amen
and
to
so
that.
It's hard to understand, you know, why people commit these heinous crimes. If you believe in angels, and you better believe in demons, because they exist too.
Oh, absolutely. The Bible's pretty explicit on that.
Right. And so, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things you just don't know. You don't know what to say, basically.
No, that's the thing, Ben. I've got a degree in communication. And I've been speaking since I was literally about 6 or 7 years old in front of crowds, and I have no idea what to say when stuff like this comes up. I have no idea.
Oh, I know. And this stuff like this has been going on for a long time, you know, and it's getting worse.
Well, I mean, since Cain and Abel.
Yeah, well, yeah. But it's getting worse, and, you know, that should have taught us now how to live. Jesus come here and died for us. What about his murder? What they did to him?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So we should have learned from that. Some of us have, but Some of us haven't, and I don't know. I still think, you know, if you have Christ in your life, you can. He'll help you. The angels, they'll help you get away from these demons, because they are on this earth. They do exist, and I believe they can get inhabit your body.
No, I believe that as well, Ben, and you know, I appreciate your call so much, and that's actually the direction that I was going with this anyway, so I appreciate you. Great call from you, and by the way, one thing that I will note before I go into this point, it sounds like Mrs. Ben, whoever that may be, is a good woman if she's somebody that brought you back to Christ when you started to stray. That's actually the purpose of marriage that God gives in the first place, is that the whole reason that marriage exists is that it is supposed to teach us to love one another, and the purpose of that is to help us better love God. So it sounds like whoever Mrs. Ben is, she is definitely fulfilling her role as a wife. I've never met the lady, but she sounds like a wonderful person. And when it comes to this, really what Ben is sort of underscoring there is that people react to their environment, they react to stress or all these other, you could even say temptation from demons, from the enemy that are coming from all directions. And if you want a great commentary on how that may or may not be happening, but certainly one that has a biblical basis, I highly recommend C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters. But all these environmental factors, whether it's stress, whether it's something horrific that this man was going through, like a divorce, the difference in people that go down this horrible dark path and people that don't, many times, is faith. In belief that there is a higher power that they will answer to, and something that allows you to get through horrible tragedies like this is remembering that there is a God that loves you, that cares about you, that put you on earth for a specific reason, and really holding to that is what helps a lot of people. I know it helps me. Helps me from slipping into doing horrific, heinous acts, because even if that thought enters your mind, and for some people it does and for some people it doesn't, even if that horrific thought enters your mind, you can immediately bat it away, because that's something that would disappoint my father. Those lives are not my right to take. I have a responsibility to the Lord. And also, even though this is one of the sort of appealing to our lesser sense of morality, you also have to keep in mind that there is the consideration that there may be an eternal punishment for that. And going back to Christ, going back to the teachings of the Bible, that really is the answer. And there's somebody that really underscores that and describes that very well, and we're going to go to him in just a second. It's not a caller, it's actually one of my childhood heroes who's no longer with us. I want to play a recording of something he said, and we'll get to that in just a second. That will be coming up when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Matthew 28:19-20. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 is the number if you want to weigh in. And we've actually covered quite a bit of ground today, starting out with that just absolutely heartbreaking story about the Air Force vet who wound up killing his wife and one of their four daughters. The other two luckily escaped with their lives and then burned their family home on fire. And then talked about that 16-year-old who was about to be a senior in high school who was gunned down in a drive-by shooting in Birmingham. So just kind of depressing, obviously. But also, I do think that there was hope for the future. There is hope for mankind. And really, one story that highlighted that, which I was really glad to see, was that the four boys in Thailand on that soccer team that got stranded inside the cave because of the flood were able to be rescued. That it really does show that humans have a capacity to do great good and to help one another out, even when the danger to themselves is incredibly high, and that they're willing to selflessly give of themselves and help out other people. Now, that being said, there is an answer to all this. And I've talked about the answer many a time. I do it every day when we talk in the chaplain's report. I don't always specifically address this issue, but I do try to point back to what the answer actually is in every single one. And there is somebody who is a real hero of mine, that he gives this monologue, and it really made me think of him. I have quite a few heroes when it comes to broadcasters. You guys know that I'm a big fan of Glenn Beck. I'm a big fan of Paul Harvey. So guys that had a big influence on my life. But a lot of you don't know that I didn't always want to be a broadcaster. In fact, I didn't really figure that out until about, I would say, my sophomore or junior year of college. And there were a number of different careers paths that I considered going down, including being an ag teacher. And when I was real little, I, of course, wanted to be Spider-Man, but that did not work out. I can't tell you how many spiders I microwaved trying to get them radioactive and bite me so that I could get super spidey powers. It just, it never happened. So anyway, but a lot of you probably don't know, by the time I hit about third or fourth grade, I really got into comedy and I wanted to be a stand-up comic. And this guy was my absolute favorite. He was my hero, the first real country comedian, the mouth of the South from Yazoo City, Mississippi. I was a huge Jerry Clower fan. And I loved his comedy, I loved his jokes, and I wanted to be like Jerry Clower. But there's a monologue that he gives at Belmont College when he did a show down there that I think really shows what the answer is when we're confronted with just horrific acts like this committed by human beings. And he gives glory to the source of which this idea comes from, which is God. But I want you to listen to this monologue, and this is a much longer clip than I usually play, but I think it is absolutely worth it, and it is needed today. So let's listen to this. This is Jerry Clower.
Everywhere I go, people say, Jerry, do you know what's good for this country? You know what we ought to do? You know, I do a lot of banquets by myself in January and February, and some sports awards banquets in the fall. A lot of times folks will pick me up at the airport, and the minute I get in the limousine, they'll say, Jerry, let me tell you what's wrong with this town. And when you get out here to this TV station, or when they interview you on that radio, you tell them this. This is what we need. Let me tell you what's wrong with this town. And usually I want to grab him in the throat and say, you are the main thing wrong with this town. But if you would ask me to make a suggestion, what do we need in America now? I would say to you that we ought to go to loving one another. L-O-V-E. You know, our country has always been run on dollars and cents. But there's some decisions you need to make based on compassionate love. And dollars not enter into it at all. That's right.
Amen. Amen.
Real love. Folks, we need to love one another. I'm talking about real love. My mother, who's 18 years older than I am, eats chicken backs and chicken wings. And she says that's her favorite piece of chicken. Do you know why she eat the wing and the back of the chicken? Because when times was hard, in the early days, a period of my life that I didn't have a daddy, my mother ate the back and the wing of the chicken because she wanted her two boys to have them good pieces. That's why she developed a taste for the back and the wing. What we need is real love. I ain't talking about love that's just put on. I'm talking about real love. I was having lunch with a man the other day, a fine Christian buddy of mine. A waitress spilt a hot bowl of soup down his back. And I said to myself, he'll probably get them told. He looked up and he took the waitress by the hand. He said, darling, I hate this happened to you. I'm so sorry this happened to you. I know it embarrassed you. Love. Real love. When I was a boy, I had a buddy named Jack. Me and him caught a 8-pound channel cat. Woo, I was spending the night at his house.
It's a big catfish.
Mama cooked that channel cat. Put it on the table, and just as we finished the blessing to eat up on that catfish, a bunch of company walked in the house. Jack jumped up and grabbed that platter of fish and run and hid it on the bed. Jack's mama whipped him for not sharing that catfish. Now, Jack loved me. He loved me so much, he didn't want to share with nobody else. Occasionally, and this is personal, but occasionally, I get a call from Tandy Rice, my manager. And I'll answer the phone, I'll be at home. And Tandy will say, Jerry, I don't want to discuss no business. And $100,000 deal may be brewing, or more. And he'll say, I'm not calling you to talk business. I just want to hear your voice because I love you. Real love is what this country needs. I was talking to a fellow the other day. I said, man, start loving folks. He said, Jerry, I can't get my mind off of the fact that somebody's going to overrun this country and going to whoop us. Listen, don't worry about nobody whooping us. We love our freedom too much. Now, I can conceive of a fellow being a conscientious objector. I can understand that. I can understand an individual just being yellow and want somebody else to do his fighting for him. I can understand that. I really can't. But I can't fathom anybody being opposed to us being prepared to keep this country free. Now, I cannot figure that out. I cannot.
Absolutely. Now, remember, Jerry's a vet. He served his country.
Fella told me the other day, said, oh, Jerry, China's gonna overrun us and whoop us. I said, man, I know I ain't scared of China. The head fella come over here the other day and he wasn't but 4 foot tall. Well, we can all get a pan top apiece and whoop them. If this country ever falls, it'll be from within. It won't be from without. We need to love one another. Boys and girls, men and women, let's all right now rededicate our lives to start loving one another. Families need to love one another. You don't need to fly in no expert and show no slides and listen to no week of lectures to find out how we're supposed to do it. L-O-V-E. The Lord said it years ago, love others like you want to be loved. And if we'll do this, this, in my opinion, will help America more than anything else. Love!
The great Jerry Clower, as always. I mean, just absolutely spot on. Could not agree with him more. And it's amazing how that started with what's the problem with this country. And he goes into a talk about Christ and about the Lord and about loving one another, because that is the greatest command. When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest command in the law? He said, well, that's actually pretty simple. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. He said that the entirety of the law hangs on these two things. In other words, the law hangs on them. Back then, laws were displayed on walls, and that's how you knew what the law was, is that you had a wall on a government building, and they had laws or edicts that were displayed. And being under Roman occupation at the time, this is something that they would have understood. He's saying, essentially, that there is no law that makes any difference unless you hang them on those two things. So when we're looking at these just absolutely heartbreaking stories about people, what was the common theme in all of them? Well, it doesn't matter what the horrific act is, it was a lack of love. It was a dirge, in other words, a void where love did not exist. Because if they did love one another, if they loved their fellow man, they loved their neighbor, in this case, unfortunately, with this one guy from Wetumpka, if he loved his family, this is not something that would have even been contemplated. And I want to point out a couple things before we go to a break inside Jerry's monologue there, where he talks about his mom eating the bad pieces of chicken because she cared about her boys, and the waitress that spilled soup on his friend, and he was worried about her and worried about how it affected her and how it embarrassed her, more so than what happened to him. That really does illustrate what Jerry is talking about, is that real love is selfless. We could go back to the love chapter in 1 Corinthians and look at exactly that and see that love is patient and kind. It doesn't keep a record of wrongdoings. It's something where the other person, essentially what it all boils down to, is to truly love somebody else. You have to put their needs, their wants, their desires ahead of your own. That's really all it is. the answers, the best answers, they're not easy, but they are simple. They're not easy to accomplish. They're not easy to carry out. Loving people is hard. It's not easy to put your own wants and desires aside for the betterment of somebody else. But it is a simple thing to do. And I think that's a spark of the divine, that God made understanding what we have to do simple, even if it's not easy.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Trump's Supreme Court nomination is causing quite a stir. He's supposed to announce tonight, and for the past several weeks, this is driving people absolutely crazy. We talk about some of that in just a second on Tactics. Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, that's the way to get in touch with us if you want to. And the Supreme Court pick and sort of everything that's surrounding it is really starting to drive people up a wall, and it's getting tensions high. And with all of this, I do think that there's something to be said for it. But I do want to mention this. I don't know if this is directly connected, but the hysteria that you're seeing over Trump's potential Supreme Court nominee, I don't think that it's 100% unjustified, because I know how detrimental it was to think that President Obama might replace Antonin Scalia. And that was something that really bothered me. I didn't think it was the end of the world, but I mean, come on. If you had somebody of the level of, for example, one of his other nominations, like Justice Sotomayor, if you had somebody like that taking Antonin Scalia's place, that would be pretty devastating to the country, especially to conservatives, but to the country as a whole as well. And I mean, that would essentially be the end of the Constitution. And so that would be something that would have been absolutely detrimental. And so I kind of understand at least the basis of the hysteria. But I think that it's much worse on the left, even though nobody has actually been nominated. And when it comes to this, and sort of looking back in retrospect, I don't think that the hysteria was quite this way. And maybe part of that is because that Obama at the time did not have a Democrat majority in the Senate. I'm not really sure. But another thing, too, that I want to point out, even though that might make the hysteria a little bit worse when it comes to this one, there is something else that you would think would lessen it, because it's not like they're replacing the conservative lion like they would have been with Scalia with somebody who is a very liberal justice from Obama's side. I mean, you reverse the role. Kennedy was certainly not a consistent conservative. I mean, he was the swing vote on the court for years. That was what he was known for. So I don't think it's fair to say that it's the same as it would have been to replace Scalia. To put it into perspective, this would be almost like, and goodness knows, even though I'm not very fond of the lady, that I would not want this to happen. I don't want anything bad to happen to anybody. But if Ruth Bader Ginsburg died and then Trump got to appoint a nominee, to me that would be a much more serious concern for people on the left than just replacing Justice Kennedy. Because that would be a pretty good equivalent to what it was like for the conservative side when Justice Scalia died. And so because of that, I do think that some of this hysteria is, you can kind of at least see where they're getting the idea, but I think that it's gone way further than it really should have, and further than it did when it was the people on the other side of the aisle worried about Obama's potential appointment, which eventually resulted in Merrick Garland. But really, tensions are high all around, and unfortunately, this is an example, a much more minor example, an example that has far less consequences than the ones that we've been looking at this morning. But this is a a side effect of people not having love for their fellow man, love for their neighbor, like we were talking about right before the break. You guys remember the story, I don't know if you've caught this, but it made the rounds and a lot of people saw the video of the kid that was in Whataburger. He was just sitting there in Whataburger, minding his own business, wearing a Make America Great Again hat. I guess the guy was a Trump supporter. I mean, that's kind of goes along with the MAGA hats. And just sitting there in a Whataburger there in Texas late one night, and a 30-year-old named Kino Jimenez goes over and rips the hat right off of the teen's head. Apparently, he grabbed him so hard that it actually pulled out some hair when he ripped the hat off of him. And then afterward, throws a Coke of some kind in his face and walks out, string of profanities, so on and so forth. And so this whole thing goes viral. And because there was a video of it that was taken, the guy that threw the Coke in the kid's face and stole his hat, he was identified and he was promptly fired from his job. The guy was apparently some kind of bartender, and the employer saw this video and fired him immediately. And then he was arrested, because you can't just steal things and you can't just throw Cokes in people's faces. That's actually assault from a legal standpoint. And so what they wound up doing is he got fired and then arrested. So not a good day for him, obviously. I think that he would take that back if he could. But he was charged specifically with assault and theft. And because it was a violent theft, that upgrades it to a felony. So if you assault somebody, depending on the level of the assault, that can be viewed as a misdemeanor. Probably something as minor as throwing somebody, I mean, relative to actually physically bringing harm to somebody, that usually throwing a Coke in somebody's face would just be a misdemeanor assault, and a petty theft like that would also be a misdemeanor. But because it was a violent theft, because you couple the assault with the theft, that actually upgrades it to a felony because of the action that was taken. So this guy is now a felon, and ironically, if charged and convicted, or he has been charged, if convicted, because this guy was arrested, then he'll actually lose his right to vote. So that is kind of ironic, especially when you're considering that being getting his political message across and not liking the political message of somebody else is the whole reason that this event took place. But according to KSAT, which is the local ABC affiliate there in Texas, said that he was, in an interview with them, he said that the reason that he did it is because he was angry, because a MAGA hat is the same thing as a KKK hood. Okay, first of all, if you think that a Make America Great Again hat is the same as a Klan hood, you are absolutely out of your freaking mind. There's just no nicer way to put it. Now, goodness knows that I've had my differences with the president. I was never a fan of the Make America Great Again slogan. I didn't like the messaging. I didn't like the way that it was presented. And there are some people, I'm sure, that were Trump supporters and even ones that came after me on Twitter and social media attacking me because of my stance. You have to keep in mind I was a never Trump election. And so there are crazy people, absolutely, that are all about the Make America Great Again. But the vast majority of the people that I've met really aren't. And if you think that supporting Donald Trump for president is the same thing as literally killing by lynching and torture of black people, you need to get your head checked. There is absolutely no comparison whatsoever between the two. Are there people that wear the Make America Great Again hat that probably are racist? There are a small minority of them, but yes, there probably are actual racist people that wear the Make America Great Again hat. But to my knowledge, there's not a whole bunch of Trump supporters decked out in Make America Great Again deal that are rounding up black people and murdering them. That is just simply not happening. And to compare the two really, in my mind, diminishes the horrors that people went through at the hands of the Klan. When you're saying a person wearing a Make America Great Again hat is the same as being a Klansman, that to me greatly diminishes and belittles the horrors that those people survived. If I were a survivor of that violence and actually lived through the era where the Klan was rounding up and killing people, I would be horribly offended at that comparison. It's not the same thing. But even, let's just say, for the sake of argument, just to kind of follow that through, let's just say that it were a Klan hood. Let's take the MAGA hat out of the equation. Let's say that a guy walks into a Whataburger actually wearing a Klan hood, and that it was symbolic of the Klan, symbolic of the racism that happened back then. Let's just say that that actually did happen, just for the sake of argument and play that out. Still doesn't justify what he did. I mean, as horrible as the Klan is, and we just talked about some of the things that they were involved in, as horrible as they were, still doesn't justify you stealing from them and then throwing a drink in their face. Now, can you understand the emotion that goes behind that if it were an actual Klan hood? Yeah, I can understand the, you know, the vitriol that may be sort of cast their way that would have been, in my mind, well-deserved. Still doesn't justify you assaulting people. Still doesn't justify stealing from people. Two wrongs do not make a right. So even if this were, you know, if we can put ourselves in that mindset, even though that would be really strange, but even if this guy actually had walked in wearing a Klan hood, still wouldn't have justified these actions. And I've been very consistent on this. There were people on the left cheering and praising when people punched Richard Spencer in the face. The guy's an alt-right leader, a neo-Nazi. Look, there is no love in my heart whatsoever for the alt-right. I've been personally attacked by the alt-right on a couple of occasions. But I gotta tell you, just because I don't like the guy, just because I despise what he says, does not mean that I think it's okay to punch the guy. I've read through the Bible many a time, and I really don't remember where it's like, you know, turn the other cheek. Well, unless, of course, you're like really super duper offended, and then it's perfectly okay to just assault people, even if it's not in self-defense. Pretty sure that verse isn't in there. Not even in the Message version of the Bible do I think it goes quite that far. But anyway, my point in all that is, we have really gotten off track here when it comes to the way that we view what is and is not politically correct. And there were several people on Twitter, unfortunately, defending this. I didn't see any prominent members of the Democrat Party specifically defending this, which, you know, I feel a lot better about, but still, the idea that there were people on there cheering and defending this, to me, is just absolutely indicative of where we are right now. And another thing that I thought was hilarious is on the way out, the guy that did the assault and stole the guy's hat, he used a racial slur against the guy. Used the N-word. So the guy's also a hypocrite on top of that. So if you're going to be all about racial harmony and you're worried that specifically you, the reason that you cite that you were participating in this and the reason that you committed this crime, or a couple of crimes, I guess, the reason that you were doing so is because you felt that the guy was racist. Well, you're using a racial slur, so that makes you a hypocrite on top of that. So there's just absolutely no justification for this whatsoever. And really, what I think that should be noted here is how can such a terrible thing happen at Whataburger? Whataburger is such a happy place. How can this happen at Whataburger? You ever had a Whataburger? They're delicious. That is my favorite fast food place. I specifically, when I go past Clanton at the 205 exit where the Whataburger is, I make sure to stop just about every time, even if I'm not that hungry, because I absolutely love Whataburger. I'm still clamoring, and I should start a campaign to get Whataburger brought back to Montgomery, because I'm seriously missing that East Chase location. I used to drive from Auburn to Montgomery to East Chase just to get Whataburger. But anyway, I won't get off on that diatribe, but it really is indicative of where we are as a country. I mean, a grown man in a fast food restaurant mugging a teenager, I don't care how offended you are, it does not justify you committing crimes. And this is true regardless of what the crime is, regardless of what the offense is. It does not justify you committing a crime. I would say the same thing if this were a conservative guy that ripped a Hope and Change shirt or a Hope and Change hat off of a kid and threw a drink in his face. That wouldn't be acceptable either. I don't like Obama. To me, I'm sure that I view him pretty much the same as a lot of people on the left view Trump. Doesn't matter. Still not okay. Even if you reversed it. So, a lot of discussion on this. 860-1440 if you want to weigh in. And it looks like we have a caller waiting, so we will get to the calls in just a second. 860-1440 if you want to talk about it. Throughout the entirety of the...
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com, 860-1440. That is the way to get in touch with me if you want to call in, and you also have the option. You can always tweet me at Tactics Radio. And speaking of calls, let's go straight to the phones. Let's go to Mark on line one. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Caleb. How you doing this morning?
Doing pretty good. What's on your mind, my friend?
Fantastic. Yeah, just a couple points really quick. Talking about, you know, looking at the Word of God there, look at when Jesus Christ was with the 12 and they were following him. Yes, he did say, you know, if any man striketh you upon the cheek, give him your right cheek, you know, and that was a commandment, that was a guidance that he gave to the 12. But if you, you know, if you look at the dispensation under Paul, I mean, Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 18, King James Bible, he says, now he says, if it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. So we see right there where it says, if it be possible, as much as it lies within you, live peaceably with all men. So what we have there by Paul is saying is, look, you know, you're offended, you get struck or something like that, you are to do as best as you can to live peaceably with these people.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can't do it. Sometimes it's not possible. And I like to make this comparative. You know, if you're out shopping or something with your wife, and just say somebody, I don't know, somebody comes up to her and say, strikes her on the side of the face, you know. Well, I mean, if you look at it from a completely gospel aspect, yeah, you're supposed to give them your right cheek. But that's where it gets good with Paul under his dispensation because, you know, if I'm standing there and my wife gets struck, well, if it be possible, as much as life in me, I may not have the strength to stand there and take it and tell her to do that, so it may not be possible because Paul says if it be possible, and he's probably going to get punched in the face. So
yeah.
That's just, you know.
Yeah, now here's the thing. If it were something that you knew that it was a one-time thing and it probably wasn't going to happen again and you knew that there was no longer any reason to feel that you or anybody else were in danger, I could kind of see taking the approach of turning the other cheek and not retaliating. But I got to tell you, if somebody just randomly walks up to somebody in my family and attacks them, I have no reason to believe that they're not going to continue attacking them. And so that's got to stop right then and there.
You got the right to defend yourself. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. And Jesus even asserts that when he tells his disciples, he says, it seems that none of us have a sword. So if a man doesn't have a sword, he needs to go out and sell his cloak and buy one. So self-defense is obviously somebody or obviously an idea that Jesus himself defended.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Well, that's good. And on the other thing I want to talk about,
sure,
is I think the Democrats, primarily Mitch McConnell, and the ones on the Senate, when they're looking at this confirmation thing, I think the Republicans need to use this, and they need to repeat it over and over again, and especially President Trump and the people involved with this confirmation thing. If you remember when Sonia Sotomayor, was in the confirmation hearing,
right,
they asked her, they said, what is, you know, why do you feel like you're qualified to sit on the Supreme Court? And I remember what she said, something key. She says, my rich Latino heritage gives me, you know, the experience I need to sit on the Supreme Court. Well, that's not absolutely nothing to do with jurisprudence or being able to look at the original ten of the Constitution or where the framers, you know, what they were speaking about at the time they wrote the Constitution. So it doesn't go to an originalist thing. It's kind of like, you know, kind of a politically correct thing. You know, my rich heritage, you know, in which, you
well,
know what McConnell
you have
said.
You have to understand how this works, Mark, and I'm not condoning this. I'm just saying that this is how the left thinks, trying to get inside their head. They really do believe that the number of labels and minority statuses that they can stack on one another gives them value as a human being. Because it's all about collectivism. And because
and
of that,
they're vested in that. Yeah.
Right. And because of that, the number of groups that you can belong to that you feel have been, you know, victimized or whatever else, they believe that that entitles them to certain things. And that also defines their value as a human being. Because if you're a collectivist, you believe that your entire identity, your entire value as a person comes from the number of groups that you belong to.
Absolutely. And Ayn Rand wrote a fantastic book on that, her and Leonard Peikoff.
Oh, yeah. Ayn Rand is gold, for sure.
Absolutely. Nevertheless, what they need to do is, I remember Mitch McConnell saying, we shouldn't have any problem with Sonia Sotomayor having it fast-tracked. And he also said that with Elena Kagan, too.
Mm.
Now, and I know this is this thing with the Republicans. They'll fast-track a Democrat nominee when Democrats are in charge. But when it comes to a Republican, oh my goodness, it becomes a Robert Bork thing altogether.
All of a sudden, they're having a hard time figuring out how to get this person through. I know it's very, very frustrating.
So they need to get on the TV and they just need to stick with that point and repeat it and say, you remember, Sotomayor was appointed. I said that I would fast track it. It had no problem to be fast tracked.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to stick with that and just drive that home, all the media outlets, whatever. And I think that way, if they'll do that, that'll kind of take away some of their firepower when they're saying, well, we just can't nominate anybody, Donald Trump, because he doesn't reflect the values of our modern society of diversity and all this stuff. They say, no. They need to say, we fast-tracked your guys. Okay, it's our turn now.
No, I agree 100%. That is a very wise political strategy. And I just want to ask you this, Mark, before I let you go, because, one of the front runners is Amy Barrett, who I think would be a phenomenal choice. If I were Trump, that would be the person that I would pick out of the people on a short list. Now, personally, I'd rather have Thomas Lee, but Thomas Lee's not on the short list. There are rumors that Amy Barrett is going to be the nominee, and I hope that is the case because she is a very strong conservative. Would it not, since you were talking about diversity and labels and everything, would it not just be, and I like her just because she is a good justice, that has nothing to do with her gender.
Exactly.
But for the left, especially where labels and gender and all that stuff are everything to them, would it not just be deliciously ironic that it could possibly be a female justice that is the deciding vote that overturned Roe v. Wade?
Oh, that would be our you couldn't write a better story full of irony than that. You know what I'm saying?
No, and again, to people like us who don't really care about the labels, who don't care about it, we just like the fact that she's a good justice. That stuff doesn't matter. But to the Democrats, that would be devastating to have a woman be the vote, the new vote that winds up overturning that. If that happens, I don't know if the court's actually going to do that or not. I'm a fan of irony.
Yeah, oh, it would. It absolutely would. And she's my first pick, too. With me, I like Mike Lee. I know there was some a meeting between him and the president, but I don't think he's not under any serious consideration. But he has a whole bunch of, I think, really good originalists that he's thinking about putting on there. I'm not sure about, there's some other guy that's running. I'm not too sure about him. I can't think of his name.
Kavanaugh.
I'm not sure. He's kind of wishy-washy, but she's my first pick, and I just hope he nominates her. I hope she gets confirmed. In other words, I hope she gets fast-tracked. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. No, I'm 100% with you. Thank you for your call, Mark. I do appreciate it. You have a good morning. And, what Mark was saying, I think politically is very expedient. I think it's very wise. And when it comes to that, that should be something that enters into the consideration. It's like, look, even a Republican majority in the Senate confirmed one of Obama's appointees. And Sotomayor is the furthest left on the Supreme Court. And this is not just me saying this. There are several news sources. And one that I'm thinking about specifically, the New York Times ranked all of the justices on the political scale. And I thought, even though I have some issue with the New York Times reporting from time to time, I thought they did a really solid job in giving a pretty good gauge of where the justices are. Not that I'm an expert in this stuff, but I do try to follow it as closely as I can, and I have a lot of friends that are. And speaking of that, I just wanted to say really quickly, since the announcement is going to come tonight, tomorrow morning we have Ben Dupree, one of the best legal minds in the state of Alabama, especially when it comes to stuff like religious liberty. He has been a staff attorney for the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama. He is going to be on with me tomorrow, I believe at 10 a.m. So we will, of course, be discussing Trump's pick, his nominee, who he has appointed. And so we'll be talking about that tomorrow. But anyway, I say all of that to get back to my main point and something that we were talking about in Mark's call. I think that it would be politically expedient to do that and remind them that Sotomayor, according to the New York Times, is not Caleb Colquitt saying this, is further to the left than Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she was still fast-tracked by a Republican majority in the Senate. Mitch McConnell was perfectly okay with that. Now, that frustrates me, and goodness knows Mitch McConnell and I have our differences, but that ought to have gained some political goodwill for sure when it comes to the left and the way that they are handling this. But watching CNN, especially with Jeffrey Toobin, who has been constantly on CNN and been absolutely inconsolable since Justice Kennedy stepped down. If you're watching this, you would think the world is coming to an end, the apocalypse is upon us, and we're going to be back to, we're essentially going to be Nazi Germany within the span of a couple years after the Trump nominee, whoever it is confirmed. It's funny, they already hate the Trump nominee and don't even know who it is yet. But anyway, we'll get to that in just a second. We'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in the Supreme Court. And speaking of political history when it comes to Supreme Court justices, we have some interesting history that I'd like to bring up that I think a lot of people are forgetting. We've got some sound bites to prove my point here. That's coming up in just a second.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
The Christian religion is, above all the religions that ever prevailed or existed in ancient or modern times, the religion of wisdom, virtue, equity, and humanity. John Adams.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, that's the way to get in touch with us if you want to do so. And I got to bring this up because I see, here's the thing. The best way to describe this is the way that the left is absolutely freaking out over this is they're going overboard with it. They're overplaying their hand as they normally do. And this announcement's supposed to come at 8 p.m. tonight, which, by the way, I'm going to be live tweeting. We'll have Ben Dupree on tomorrow to discuss the fallout and everything that's going to happen as a result of this, talk about the candidate and who that kind of person is. So we will be observing all of that tomorrow. I'm going to be live tweeting it tonight. So if you want to check me out on Twitter, at Tactics Radio would be the way to do that. And there are a lot of people claiming that Mitch McConnell is being a hypocrite because he is not waiting for the election. Because you'll remember when it came to Merrick Garland, Mitch McConnell refused to even hear the man out, refused to even hear him as a potential nominee because he said, this is an election year. And because of that, we're not going to have this big decision decided by a lame duck president on his way out. We're going to let the American people decide on the president, and then the new president will be deciding who the nominee will be. And then we will consider him regardless of whether that happens to be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. So there's a couple things with this. First of all, I do want to mention that hypocrisy is not the same thing as inconsistency. Hypocrisy is something that's overused. And I've probably overused it at least from time to time, but I try to be very distinct and specific in my language. And because of that, I try to avoid using hypocrisy when I don't think that actual hypocrisy is taking place. So here's the difference. Inconsistency just means that you have more than one standard for something. In other words, a different situation based on how it helps or hurts you. You can be inconsistent because of that. If you change your beliefs based on the situation, you can be inconsistent based on the way that you see the world. In other words, you see it one way when it helps you and another way when it's going to be something that hurts you. And because of that, you'll change what you do or you change what you believe based on how it seems to affect you at the time. That's inconsistency. Hypocrisy actually comes from a Greek word that had to do with the theater, and that specifically means pretending to be one thing when you're really something else. And so even if the point is well-founded, and we'll talk about that in a second, but even if the point is well-founded and Mitch McConnell is being inconsistent here, that's very different than being hypocritical. And so a lot of people use the word hypocrisy and fling that around a lot. Typically, when I use the word hypocrisy, I'm trying to think specifically that this person is pretending to be something that they are not. That is what the actual root word and the definition of hypocrisy is. Being inconsistent is not the same thing. You can be inconsistent without being a hypocrite. I think you could actually be a hypocrite without being inconsistent. I don't know exactly how that would work. I'd have to come up with some kind of scenario for that. But generally speaking, when people say hypocrisy, when they say you're a hypocrite, what they mean is you're actually inconsistent. Being hypocrite is much more specific. But anyway, that being said, I do want to play this clip because what they're saying is, well, Mitch McConnell was saying that this shouldn't happen in an election year. Well, this is an election year because there's midterm elections coming up. But listen to this clip and see if you can spot why that may not be a very good argument. This is Mitch McConnell back in March, on the 20th of March, 2016. This was on CNN.
The decision. A lame duck president on the way out the door, or the president we're in the process of electing right now. What is the tradition? It's been 80 years, 80, since a vacancy created in a presidential election year was filled. You have to go back to 1888, Grover Cleveland in the White House, to find the last time a vacancy created in a presidential year was filled by a Senate of a different party from the president. So we know what the tradition is, Dana. It's the Biden rule. When Joe Biden was chairman of the Judiciary Committee in 92, he said if a vacancy occurred, it would not be filled because of the pending election. Harry Reid said back in 2005 that even though the president nominates, that doesn't guarantee a vote. And Chuck Schumer, who's going to be the Democratic leader next year, said 18 months before the end of President Bush 43's term that if a vacancy occurred in the Supreme Court, they wouldn't fill it. So we know what the tradition is. This nomination ought to be made by the president we're in the process of electing this year.
Okay, so in that clip, I think Mitch McConnell makes it pretty clear, and goodness knows that Mitch McConnell is not my favorite person. I've complained about him quite a bit on this show. But Mitch McConnell makes it very clear there. He is talking about a presidential election. He stated that over and over and over again. He said this tradition happens in whenever a president is on the eve of being elected. And so whether you like Mitch McConnell, whether you don't like Mitch McConnell, whether you want them to nominate or you wanted them to hear out Merrick Garland or not, the fact is that you cannot say that that was wholly inconsistent because this is an election year and that was an election year. It is very clear there that what Mitch McConnell is talking about and the standard that he presents is this was a presidential election year. Even the Washington Post fact checker, which is hardly a conservative news piece, hardly a conservative news outlet, said in reference to this whole thing, whether or not Mitch McConnell's being inconsistent here, quote from the Washington Post fact checker, it is pretty clear that the debate in 2016 revolved around a nomination made in a presidential election year. Democrats are simply spinning a false narrative. Now, when Washington Post is coming to the defense of Mitch McConnell, you know that they have a good reason to do so because that is not something that they do very often. And even they're saying the Democrats are just weaving a political narrative here. There's no truth to that. And let's furthermore think about this. I think that, frankly, Mitch McConnell is being at least somewhat inconsistent. Now, it was clear that he was saying the standard is a presidential election year, but I would say that this was not a smart move by Mitch McConnell. I said this back in 2016 when the whole Merrick Garland thing was happening. I said what should happen, because this is the constitutional standard, the president offers the nomination, the Senate hears that person out and votes up or down. I said that what should have happened is that Mitch McConnell should have heard him out. And then when Merrick Garland presented his case, and by the way, just a side note here, the idea that his name was Garland is really funny to Final Fantasy fans, and I know that's a very niche audience, but Garland is a very prominent bad guy throughout the Final Fantasy series, especially in the first and the ninth Final Fantasy games. But anyway, so that to me was hilarious that he was kind of viewed as the bad guy, and also in Final Fantasy he's actually shares a name with one of the bad guys. But that being said, when Merrick Garland was nominated, Mitch McConnell made it very, very clear that this is about a presidential election. But I still said back then that what should have happened is he should have said, look, the president has the right to nominate if he wants to. We'll hear him out. We'll bring it to a vote. And then they should have voted him down, because then they could at least say, look, we considered it, but he didn't nominate somebody that we felt was conducive. In fact, this is the issue that I have with Mitch McConnell. People can generally tell when you're being real with them. In other words, when you're telling the truth and when you're lying to them and when you're standing on principle and when you're really just doing something for political advantage. And I think Mitch McConnell was doing it more for political advantage than this was something that he genuinely believed. But here's the thing.
if that was the case, and I think that it was, he should have come out and said that. He should have said, look, the president and the Senate, the Congress, both have checks and balances over the Supreme Court. The president is exercising his check and balance and the ability to nominate. We're going to use our check and balance as a Senate to choose not to vote for the guy. And that's the way it should have been handled. If he was doing it for political advantage, he should have just come out and said, yes, for political advantage. Pretending that there was some kind of deep abiding principle, I think, was the mistake here. But here's the thing. This is not using whataboutism, because just because somebody else does something doesn't make it okay. But Democrats now preaching to Republicans about how wrong it is to not confirm somebody in an election year and not to even hear Merrick Garland out, they're being completely inconsistent. And you heard Mitch McConnell reference the Biden rule. This is what that is actually referring to. This is Joe Biden from the Senate floor back when he was Senator Joe Biden in June 25th, on 1992. This is directly from the Senate floor, Senator Joe Biden, who was the head of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate back then.
It is my view that if a Supreme Court justice resigns tomorrow or within the next several weeks, or resigns at the end of the summer, President Bush should consider following the practice of a majority of his predecessors and not name a nominee until after the November election is completed. The Senate, too, Mr. President, must consider how it would respond to a Supreme Court vacancy that would occur in the full throes of an election year. It is my view that if the president goes the way of Presidents Fillmore and Johnson and presses an election year nomination, the Senate Judiciary Committee should seriously consider not scheduling confirmation hearings on the nomination until after the political campaign season is over.
All right, so that's Joe Biden, vice president. When he was Barack Obama's vice president, he didn't seem to have a problem with Barack Obama nominating Merrick Garland with 8 months to go in the middle of an election year. Didn't seem to have any trouble with that whatsoever, and he even said that the Senate should not hear that nominee if President H.W. Bush nominates somebody. And keep in mind, this was all surrounding, back in 1992, this was all surrounding rumors that there was going to be a retirement by Justice Byron White. And who was appointed by President Clinton in 1993 that filled that? Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the second most liberal justice on the court. And so this idea that, well, Trump, now that because he stole that nomination, he should appoint Merrick Garland, which Chuck Schumer suggested the other day, that is far beyond the pale. And Democrats set that standard. When that happened, and when the nomination came open, and granted, Byron White didn't actually retire until President Clinton, he was waiting for that, and that's fine. But I'm saying, this standard that Democrats are saying, well, now you should appoint a moderate, you should appoint somebody in the middle to replace him. No. They replaced Justice White with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't want to hear anything about Democrats trying to push this narrative that now, because Trump's in this position, that he ought to be appointing somebody that doesn't align with the beliefs of his base, the beliefs of his conservative base. No, I don't want to hear that at all, especially when you guys nominated Ruth Bader Ginsburg to sit on the court, which has been an unmitigated disaster for the Supreme Court and for the country as a whole. And then, of course, creepy Uncle Joe tries to backtrack when Scalia died and try to explain what he meant. He's like, oh, well, I meant, you know, an extreme candidate. Well, first of all, it doesn't get much more extreme than Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it also doesn't get much more extreme than Sonia Sotomayor, who your running mate, Barack Obama, who you served as the vice president for, nominated. And so when it comes to this, there is just absolutely no justification for Joe Biden. So any threats or any, allegations that Mitch McConnell is undergoing right now of being inconsistent, the Democrats have absolutely no moral ground to stand on, because they set the standard for that. They did it first. Not saying that that makes it okay. I'm just saying it's hard for me to take the moral outrage of the left pretending like they've never done this when they were the ones that set that standard to begin with. Chaplin's report is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Okay, we're back. Okay. Well, today's Chaplain's Report is going to be a short one. 1 Thessalonians 5:17. Pray without ceasing. Based on the news today, I really think that that's all we need to hear. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.